All right. Good evening, friends, and welcome to another edition of the Antique Phonograph Music Program. Here I am, your host, Mac, once again, bringing you another hour of music from the crank-up age. And once again, it's another guest night. I always love when guests come on and bring their records to play for you. And tonight, this is the second appearance of Meryl Sprinson, who is the world's leading authority on Little Wonder Records. Can I say that, Meryl?
Maybe. Or at least no one else is competing for the title.
Well, you got to be up there among the Little Wonder enthusiasts. I know you've been collecting these for a very long time, and you've been doing a lot of research. And you were even saying, while you were here about 2 years ago, how much more you've learned in that time.
Right, exactly. I think I was originally just starting building the collection and didn't really even know very much at all about it. And then I guess about a year ago, decided to build a website about it and capture all of the things that I had been collecting over time, and realized, in fact, I needed to start knowing more about it. So that's really what I have done over the course of the past year. That's a detective story in many ways. And so some of the pieces that I now know are little pieces of mystery or little wonderings that I've been able to figure out. And so it's been kind of a detective story, which has been a lot of fun.
So we're going to be doing all Little Wonder Records tonight. Meryl, why don't you just give us the encapsulation of what the Little Wonder Records were?
Sure. They began in 1914, at a time when there was a monopoly in recorded music by the big three, Victor, Edison, and Columbia. Records cost a dollar, which was prohibitively expensive. And essentially, there was no recorded popular music then, because, or at least recorded music wasn't available to everyone. Little Wonder Records came along, probably in collusion with an official at the Edison Columbia, exactly, at Columbia, and broke the patent. And so these records are only 5.5 inches across instead of the more standard size. They're only recorded on one side instead of two. They only last for 2 minutes instead of the more 2 to 3, but they only cost 10 cents. And at that price point, then they took off. And so millions and millions and millions of records were sold, essentially between 1914 and 1921. Although they went as far as 1923 before everything collapsed. There were lawsuits in between. It was sold to Columbia in 1917. So really it was the 3-year period between 1914 and 1917 when it kind of reached its heyday and continued as an independent. And then under Columbia's auspices probably continued for another year or two.
Yeah, it was tough for other makers to make records during this period because of all the patents. And it's kind of surprising that they even survived.
Well, exactly. And so, you know, the major then bought them and then essentially put them out of business. But the response from the majors was really to then lower their own price point so that popular recorded music then became much more available to people.
Which I'm sure they were not happy about.
Probably not.
Well, why don't you tell us what we started off there with?
Sure. We started with a tune called Foxy Grandpa, which may or may not be performed by the Van Epps Banjo Orchestra. And we'll talk a little bit as we go about artist attribution. The reason I picked it is because it just reminds me, anyway, of the very close community that exists among record enthusiasts. I was bidding against this person on eBay on a fairly continuing basis and wrote to him and said, you know, sort of, what's up? I may have some duplicates you might be interested in. Well, it turns out that he's a relative of Milton Ager, who was a composer of the period. And he, for his own family purposes, was trying to collect all of the recordings of Milton Ager tunes, some of which had only been recorded on Little Wonder Records. So that tune, Foxy Grandpa, was in fact composed by Milton Ager, and so I thought it would be a nice place to start.
Very interesting. All right. Well, what are we going to be doing in our next set here? Why don't you give us our first one?
Okay. The next one is called When John McCormick Sings a Song. It's performed by Sam Ash. And it's another one of those sort of pieces of history to put together. I had no idea who John McCormick was, and so for me, this was just another tune. Then I read in The Groove a month or two ago that John McCormick was actually a very, very famous opera singer, like huge opera singer, but who I knew absolutely.
He was a huge popular song singer, too. He did a lot of ballads. He was quintessential Irish balladeer of the teens.
Exactly. But I had never heard of him. And so when I read this whole long article and In the Groove, it was just sort of another piece of the mystery. Oh, wait a second. And so the person who wrote the article about John McCormick had never heard this song. And so I promised him I would play it on this show so that he could hear it.
All right. Well, there's the husband and wife team of Lewis and Ferreira doing what they do best, a little Hawaiian guitar, slide guitar and regular strumming guitar medley.
The reason I included it was just as an example of how the discographic information of Little Wonder can be so problematic. This tune, number 504 on Little Wonder, is actually included in a Sears catalog. So, and I have all of the Sears catalogs on my website, which just by the way is littlewonderrecords.com, not surprisingly. In the Sears catalog, it refers to the title of number 504, excuse my Hawaiian pronunciation, is Ka Maea Ka Maoli, and says that that's the name of the tune, except that actually on the physical record, it says Hawaiian Medley. The attribution of Louise and Ferrara comes from that Sears catalog, so we're able to identify the artist that way, even though the song title is in fact incorrect.
And also we can go a little further and say they were the premier Hawaiian guitar duet of the time. There weren't a lot of other people doing that kind of music, and I have a lot of 10-inch discs of them doing that kind of thing. So it is all these little clues that we
won from here to Shanghai.
Fable fact about my handsome real home. It's tells me I'm above the race of you, the summer to the throne. For my throne will be a bungalow, a way up in the hope of being. There I'll be the ruling monarch over all. My place will be gorillas, apes, monks, and chimpanzees, who will be ever ready after my fall. Well, I would be the king, the king of
The thing about the King of the Bungalows, which I noticed, is as we know, these are different takes of records, and it's definitely a slightly different take on the song. It has to be, because it has to be shortened, first of all. And I don't want to insult the Little Wonder Records, but they have a little less quality than the majors.
Well, they certainly do, and I think that's partly why people don't collect them or have not.
So certain artists or certain singers would try to emulate popular artists' styles. So, I don't know if we'll ever be able to say with 100% surety that it was definitely Gene Green.
Right, and that's why there's a question mark in the discography around it.
Right.
The next tune, I thought, we'd start kind of weaving in a little war theme in honor of the current times. And so the next tune is an unknown baritone solo singing "The Ragtime Volunteers Are Off to War."
Now, I'm pretty sure I have this by Arthur Fields.
And you'll may be able to say whether this is that.
He's very identifiable. I know he did quite a few Little Wonders. So let's listen.
Just see those ragtime soldiers left, right,
left, right. Not back upon their shoulders, left, right, left, right. Just watch that leader man control that jambo band. Make that some demonstration. Oh, what dislocation. Oh, Colonel, don't look like a tall decision. As they go swinging by and gone. He cries down turtle dumb, says farewell, my lady love. The right turn volunteers are off the wall. Just keep those right-hand soldiers left, right, left, right. Not back upon their shoulders, left, right, left, right. Just watch that leader man control that jambo band. Ain't that some demonstration? Oh, what's in the nation? Oh, Colonel, don't look like a pound of vision. As they go swinging by and gone. He cries out, Colonel, says farewell, my lady love. The round-time volunteers are off the wall.
So, I don't think it was Arthur Fields.
I'm not the expert on that.
No, he has a more, I'd say he's more of a tenor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
okay. The next three we're going to hear, I really chose just because of the instruments that are included. So, the first is, and my pronunciation is probably just completely wrong, but it's spelled T-H-A-I-S, meditation, which is a very early classical violin recording. Then we'll hear Because, which is a street piano. And then the third one we'll hear is called Hawaiian Breezes, which is a Hawaiian instrumental trio.
Thank you.
Well, the according to your list here, this says that's a Hawaiian instrumental trio, but I only heard two instruments.
Yeah, so did I, but, you know, sort of who knows. It says trio on the label, and so that's what we do.
As we've already talked about, they weren't that thorough in their labeling. So.
Right, or their consistency, or much. So, who knows.
Okay.
The next two I thought we'd go on in the sort of war theme. The first one we'll hear is "We Don't Want the Bacon, What We Want is a Piece of the Rhine," sung by the Peerless Quartet. So I'm also kind of mixing in different kinds of artists. And then the next is the classic "Oh, How I Hate to Get Up in the Morning" by Arthur Fields.
Right. Okay.
We'll crown Bill the Kaiser with a bottle of Budweiser. We'll have a wonderful time. Old Wilhelm the Grand will tell us his load when we hit that Hindenburg line. We don't want the bacon, we don't want the bacon. What we want is a piece of the Rhine.
Yes, the very identifiable voice there of Arthur Fields, no matter if they gave it to us or not. I would say with surety that was him doing that song, and Arthur got around. He recorded for everybody. He was, and these are the days before recording contracts, so artists could do that. Yeah, all right. So this is the Antique Phonograph Music Program with your host, Mac, and tonight my guest is Merle Sprinzen. And she's one of the leading authorities on Little Wonder Records, and that's what we're listening to tonight, Little Wonder Records. And Merle, so how did you get into collecting these?
Well, it was one of those, purely by accident, which I suppose is how many people do. When I was quite younger, probably 30-some-odd years ago, my parents purchased for me at an auction one of the Brownie Box, Brownie Camera. I didn't know very much about them then, but I had them. And as I'd wander around through my life, I'd look in antique stores from time to time to look for them, and I just never saw them. But then around 1999 or so, for work, I had to go onto eBay, I was heading an e-commerce marketing program then, and I had to go onto eBay to find out what eBay was, and quickly realized that in order to figure this out, I was going to have to actually look at some auctions. Didn't know what auctions to look at. Typed in Little Wonder Records into the search engine, and up came site one, and they go into the 1700s. But what we don't know is how many of those numbers were used. So we'll be hearing later in the program one that I found that we didn't know actually exists. Whether it's an empty space because they didn't use that number, or whether it's empty because we just haven't found it yet.
Right. Okay, well, let's continue with some more music. What do we have coming up next?
This one's called Bird Voices, and I picked it because, as we've sort of been seeing so far, there's people just seem to be quite enamored with the character of sound. So Jolly Coppersmith, of course, is one of probably the most popular Little Wonder records, which I played when I was here before. And this one I've chose just because it's another one of those, you can't believe they actually kind of recorded this. The Whistler, in this instance, is a woman named Sybil Sanderson Fagan.
I love Whistlers.
So that's what we have up next.
Sybil Sanderson Fagan did a lot of whistling records. Are you sure it's a woman?
No, I'm not. I was just judging by the name, so I could be completely wrong.
I thought I had a record that was by Fagan doing whistling and yodeling, but I could be getting it mixed up with something.
Going purely by the name, so I could be completely wrong.
I might be getting my information mixed up, too, so I'm not sure. But listeners to the show know I love playing whistling records. So,
that was a primo example.
Sure.
Then next.
About the fighting game, when Mr. Hoover said to cut my dinner down, I never even hesitate, I never frown. I cut my sugar, I cut my coal, but now they dug deep in my soul. I've got the blues, I've got the blues, I've got the alcoholic blues. No more beer, my heart could tear. Goodbye, whiskey, you used to make me pretty. So long, highball, so long, gin. Oh, tell me when you're coming back again. Blues, I've got the blues, since they amputated my booze. Lordy, lordy, war is, well, you know, so I don't have to tell. Oh, I'm not the alcoholic blues, the blues.
Passed by all the acrobats, all the clowns in funny hats, and went to see the animals below. Saw a tamer put his head into a lion's mouth, waited till the tamer man was through. took his word and said, "At taming wild ones, you're a bird. But there's just one thing I'd like to ask of you. Can you tame wild women? Can you tame wild women?" You made the fox play dead, the mute and on his head. But did you ever make your wife shut up and go to bed? Oh, can you tame wild women? And they'll always lead a sweet and peaceful life. And when you come home at 3, can you pull out your key and open up the door and holler, "Don't talk back to me"? If you can tame wild women, for the Lord's sake, tame my wife.
Better sounding than a lot of the things we've heard. Quality of their sound.
Yep, and it's, I mean, I have absolutely no idea why, because there's no information about how this stuff was actually recorded. It is the case that those two records are in physically good condition, so that obviously has a lot to do with it. But most of the ones we've been playing have been fairly good condition as well.
Right. All right, so what do we got next?
Well, the next one is just a slight diversion into something called bubble books. Bubble books were books marketed to children. In fact, the very first series of books marketed to children. They were begun by Columbia almost at the point at which they purchased Little Wonder. So somewhere around 1917, Columbia purchased Little Wonder and began bubble books pretty much in the same year. They were the first, as I said, books marketed to children. You read along this kind of fairy tale of this little boy who's visited by these characters that visit him in bubbles. And when you got to a certain point in the story, you put on the record and sang along. So the one that we're going to hear now is called The Jolly Miller, which to my ear sounds a lot like a funeral dirge. And I think if you were actually to have a child listen to it like a fairy tale, or at least a happy fairy tale, I think the child would be somewhat confused. But, you know, leave it up to you to make your own decisions about this one.
There was a jolly miller once lived on the River Dee. He worked and sang from morn till night, no love so blithe as he. And it's the burden of his song forever used to be. I care for nobody, no, not I, if nobody cares for me. I live by my mill, she is to me like parent, child, and wife. I would not change my low degree for any other life. No lawyer, surgeon, doctor ever had a groan from me. I care for nobody, no, not I, if nobody cares for me. Thus life the miller, bold and free, let us rejoice and sing. The days of youth are made for glee, and time is on the wing. This song shall pass in jovial round and go from sea to sea. I care for nobody, no, not I, if nobody cares for me.
Yeah, for that Miller didn't sound too jolly there.
Nope, so who knows?
Yeah, well, now, is that marked Henry Burr? Because it definitely sounds like him.
No, it's an attribution.
Yeah, it's definitely him.
Almost none of these are marked with the artist.
The Bubble Book Records also
are not marked.
Weren't they Harper at one point?
Harper Columbia. Yes,
right.
It's Harper Columbia in the United States,
right,
and Hodder Columbia in England.
Are they what Harper Collins turned into? Do you know?
No, I think... actually, I'm not sure.
Okay, I just wonder.
I don't know.
So you got their start in publishing.
Yeah, I don't
how
know.
How far back, I don't know.
Yeah,
okay.
Don't know.
I'm sure someone out there knows and they'll email us or you.
Right. In the UK, Hodder and Stoughton, however it's pronounced, in fact still exists as a publisher. And that was the partner.
offer true. All are turned away from you, and you don't know what to do. Then you'll find one, some sweet kind one who believes in you. Then the clouds will fade away, and that someone came today. You have opened up the gates of gladness on the road to sunshine land. For you brought me from a thought of sadness when you took me by the hand. Yesterday was so gray till you showed me the way, and today I understand. You have opened up the gates of gladness on the road to sunshine land.
That was Afghanistan, a very relevant title.
Well, indeed, but they certainly had a more cheery view of it than we might right now.
Yeah, yeah. We were just saying to each other, I should say to people, but it seems like they really chose the most popular tunes to record because that's what they wanted people to buy. And they, even then, the recording industry wasn't looking to take too many chances.
Right.
Things.
Right. And they certainly wanted to record the things that people could hear and had been hearing about. And especially at the beginning when Waterson was in business with Irving Berlin, many of these were also published in sheet music form so that people could perform it at home on their piano, listen to it on the recording, sometimes in rolls through their piano, so that it was a way of allowing the music to come into people's lives.
Well, before any record tracking technology, I mean, technology just of keeping track of sales of records, sheet music sales was one of the first things that helped identify what songs are popular.
Absolutely. And the third one is Sally, Won't You Come Back from the Ziegfeld Follies of 1921. What I like particularly about that one is that it was a way of bringing the Ziegfeld Follies music more popularly, and it also speaks to the role that the Follies played in popular music of the time. So we'll be hearing three.
Thank you.
seems wrong. The nights are long as can be. Days are dreary too. I spend the hours sighing, can't stop crying. Nothing seems the same, and you're to blame for it all. Why, there are times when I even wish that I could die. Oh, look what you've done with your doggone dangerous eyes. You've had your fun. Maybe someday you'll realize you spoke of love with every glance. Then you spoiled a sweet romance. Say you're smiling now because I'm sighing. I'll do the laughing when you're crying. How you deceive with your doggone dangerous smile. And how I believe that you fooled me all the while. If I could just stop thinking of you, tell me what you want to make me love you. Just what you done with your doggone dangerous eyes.
Okay. Oh, we're doing one more before we talk. Sorry. Let's put that record on. Go ahead, Merle.
What can I do to wake you up to the things you miss? What can I do to make you thrill to another kiss? What can I do that I have not done to make you believe I love anyone? Time after time I've told you how much I miss your smile, hoping you'd let me hold you just for a little while. Time after time you refuse me your lips of mine. You don't seem to know that I love you so. So I've told you time after time.
Okay. And another unknown tenor, huh?
Yeah, and I included that one because this is an example of my finding this one, which happens to be number 1609, called obviously Time After Time. And we didn't know that it existed because none of the collectors who put the discography together had it in their collection. So when I found it, it was news to all of us that this particular number existed.
Right. Well, that's going to about do it for us for this show of Little Wonders. I know that I directed quite a few people to emails. I directed to you when you did your last show, but now you have your website, and if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
The easiest way is for them to go to the website, which again is www.littlewonderrecords.com. And don't be concerned that there are two R's in the middle. There really are two R's in the middle of the URL. And as you get to the homepage, one of the things that you can navigate to off the homepage is a section called Contact Me, and you can just do that. And various places through the site, there are also little Contact Me sections, and just do that and send me off an email or comments, and I'll be happy to respond.
And hopefully there'll be someone out there who maybe has some Little Wonder records that you don't have, or information about them.
Absolutely.
That will help you compile this database.
Yep.
One of the fun things I find about doing this show is I'll play a record by some turn-of-the-century artist, and someone will contact me and say, that was my great-great-grandfather, and I'd never heard his records before. And I'm like, oh, and they'll say, what do you know about him? I'm like, you know what? All I know is the record. What do you know? And then they'll come off and say, well, he immigrated here from this year, and he started recording, and he did this and this, and he had my father, and who had his fun. Da, da, da. So that information, I find, is really great.
It's really the best part. I mean, I think one of the reasons why I collect these is because...
thing, or can you tell me about them?
Yep, or I found these in my father's attic and, you know, typed in Little Wonder Records and, you know, out you popped and, you know, what do you know about them?
Right.
So it's just, it's a wonderful way. I think the internet has just been glorious for its way of connecting people in very, very remote locations to each other around a very narrow interest.
Right, absolutely. Well, Merle, it's been great having you on the show again 2 years later. We should do it sooner than later again.
Well, that would be great. Thanks.
I know everyone will enjoy hearing this program, and of course it'll be archived for anyone to listen to anytime. Maybe you could do a link to it from your website.
In fact, the link to the first show is on my website in the music library section, so you can visit the first show there or at WFMU.org, and this one will go up too as soon as it's posted on your site.
All right. Well, thanks for bringing by your records and sharing them with us here tonight.
Well, you're very welcome.
We appreciate it. And so I will be back, folks, next week with more records. I think I'm having a virtual guest next week. I'm starting to have guests on who don't live in this area. Another way of connecting people with the internet, they record shows and I format them and put them on. So another way for people to share their records. So, Merle, tell us what we're going to be going out with.
We're going to go out with a recording by the California Ramblers, who did several Little Wonders all sort of in one recording session. This one is number 1641, called Swanee Bluebird, and it's a foxtrot.
Tune to WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, and WFMU.org on the internet.